I think every company will have its own tribe that they will attract because of certain things that they may do or have or ways they are or just even what they do as a business.
Hi everyone, I'm Jonathan Richards and this is the HR Heroes podcast brought to you by Breathe. In this series, we're celebrating and sharing the stories of small businesses who are doing a great job of managing their people and are, in my eyes, HR heroes. In today's episode, I'm joined by Wendy Reed, MD of HR Revolution. We talk about positive HR and how Wendy has worked to develop a workplace culture that is pro-employee.
Hi, Wendy. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And also, I guess, congratulations on making it to the top 10 of the Breathe Culture Leaders list.
Thank you very much.
Now, it's great to have you on the show. Now, obviously, for the benefit of the listeners, you and HR Revolution have been one of the Breathe partners that we've been working with almost since day one, I think. So we know each other. We've talked quite a lot about business, and I know at the last partner summit in London, we had good long conversations over the dinner table about businesses and culture. And clearly, you have a very strong culture in your business, which has definitely been clear to me all along. But for the benefit of those that are listening that might not have heard of HR Revolution, could you give us an introduction of yourself and maybe tell us a little bit about what HR Revolution does?
Yeah, of course. Yes, I mean, we are proud to be one of the Breathe HR partners. It's been a really good relationship so far, which has been fantastic, and fantastic that we've been nominated and won kind of top 10 as well on the awards, which is great. As a business, I suppose culture is really a big part of what we do anyway, because we deal with companies, SMEs predominantly, but companies' culture within their kind of life cycle of employee hiring, onboarding, and kind of managing and mentoring, and then obviously right the way through to exit where needed as well. So we do get involved in kind of the complete life cycle. A big part of what we do is, in the name of HR Revolution, is really revolutionising how people see HR really within businesses. I think previously it's been seen as very police orientated and laying the law down and kind of being there to stop fun, whereas yeah. Actually nowadays it's more about building cultures that people want to work in, that are engaging, that can kind of mean that you're hiring really good talent, but people that have fun while they're at work as well. And obviously a big part of what we do is making sure that the business and the individuals are protected whilst they have that fun. Yeah, we're trying to revolutionise how HR is seen within businesses and trying to make things, making HR accessible really to everybody, both employees and business owners. And it's working really well. We're having fun ourselves with it, but it's been a really good journey.
Brilliant. No, that sounds great. And I love almost the contradiction in your name. You've got Revolution with HR, which obviously is human resources, which is sort of, it's new school, old school, isn't it? The human resources
yes.
title has almost gone the full circle, hasn't it? Maybe you can give us some ideas as to what it means to revolutionize HR.
I think it was always a difficult one. And when we were thinking about kind of what we call the business when we first set it up, all we kept saying was we want to revolutionize HR. So that's why the name HR Revolution came about, really. It's more about having a shake-up. I mean, I've been in HR for a very long time, right the way back when we were called personnel and didn't have any IT at all. So it's kind of come full circle, really, from being an admin, policies, procedures, telling people what they're not doing right and kind of sacking people when they're not really not doing it right, to actually wanting to engage people for the right reasons to come and work for fantastic companies that have got really good vision and kind of mission statements and to be part of that journey. I think generally HR has changed so much. There are still obviously the standards that are needed in place, you know, the employment law side of things, the contracts, the handbooks, all the paperwork that comes along with it. And there are still really rigorous processes that need to be followed, but they can be followed as pretty standard processes if you know what you're doing with it. And it's about them how you engage people either side of that. So when you're looking at bringing people on board, making sure that they're kind of really fully aware of what's going on, and actually speaking to people and being part of, you know, engaging them in part of your community, I guess, as your business. But it's about then having an accessible HR that people feel they can talk to. And I think that's one of the things that has been lacking over the years generally. I mean, I've worked in corporates and in startups and SMEs, so I've had the kind of mix myself, as have the team, and it does differ across the platforms. But I do think it kind of lends itself to just shaking up how things have been done and kind of bringing it into the, you know, the new technical creative age, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, where I wanted to move to, and I think you've sort of started the answer to that, is, but we found since we've been doing research and writing about company culture that there seems to be a shortage of language, or certainly particularly small businesses don't have the language about how to describe culture or how to talk about it. So what does the term company culture mean to you?
It's a difficult one, because culture is really difficult to define, because obviously for each company it's going to be really unique, or it should be really unique. I think the problem, especially SMEs face, is that we've got kind of the Google effect, the Facebook effect, and everything around that, where employees, especially new employees coming straight out of university, are kind of expecting this amazing experience of pretty much another life and another community, all paid for by the company, and it's an amazing culture. And obviously everyone wants to emulate that in its own kind of way for their business. But I do think company culture, it literally is what it is. It's as simple as that. I think you can define it in some aspects, but I generally think it's simply what it is. And if you try and manipulate it too much or kind of invent it, then it becomes something that's not real, and it rarely works. We get asked a lot to kind of come in and if we're putting together an employee handbook or a contract, it's kind of like, can you write as vision and mission for us and tell us what our culture needs to be? And that would be great if we could do that. That would be an amazing service, and I'm sure we'd make a lot of money. And there are very good companies out there that kind of offer that type of service to sit with you and kind of design that. But I do think from a culture perspective, your culture is what it is, and you have your own tribe. I think every company will have its own tribe that they will attract because of certain things that they may do or have, or ways they are, or just even what they do as a business. And I think if you attract those people, it doesn't mean they're all the same, but it means that they've got that like-mindedness, then that builds your company culture, and it helps you to just kind of define it. So it's kind of more of a feeling than it is an environment. I mean, obviously you can buy as many food balls and have as many slides into meeting rooms and garden areas and all the rest of it, which help. But I think ultimately, if you have the basis of the business and kind of the cultures of that you have within the teams that have founded those businesses, and the passion and the enthusiasm with those people, then that's what forms the culture.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. I tend to think that as a small business gets formed with one or two, three people, maybe up to 10 or 15 people, the culture is something that comes alive. It comes alive around usually the founders or the first few people, and it's something that has to be natural. But once it gets to sort of 15, maybe 20, then I think the company has to be much more deliberate about what the culture is, and to try and put some, I don't know, maybe language is the wrong word, but to put some artifacts around it, to put something that says this is who we are. And I think that's why you mentioned, vision and mission earlier on. I think that's why some companies try and put some language around terminology, vision, mission, purpose, what, why, how. There's lots of different ways of doing it. But I think it's all too easy to put that kind of stuff first. The thing, in my view, is to try and understand what the culture is and what it's like, what components it's got, and then try and capture that in the documents or in the language used.
Yes, I agree.
Brilliant. So when it comes to culture and building a culture, do you think it can be built, or does it have to grow naturally? So I've given an example in a small business, but if you've got a business of 50 people, do the leaders in that business need to be deliberate about building the culture, or should they let it grow naturally?
I think there's an element of both. I think that absolutely, if it grows naturally and that's how it forms, then that's fantastic, because it's a lot more organic and a lot easier to kind of then manage. I do think it can be built. I just think it needs to have the right messaging around it. The communication needs to be strong. And those that are formulating and then kind of progressing and pushing that culture have to stick to the same message throughout. And I think that's where it sometimes goes wrong, is where maybe not everybody's on the same page with it, or all of a sudden everything gets so busy that the culture slips and things that were trying to be put in place haven't necessarily kind of been completed. But I think if the culture leaders, whether they be the founders, owners, managers, or part of the team, if you have a good team that are really keen on developing particular cultures, then that's absolutely can be built. And we see it quite a lot, especially in companies where they want to change their culture, where maybe the culture isn't quite as good, or they've had negative connotations around it in the past for some reason. It does mean that they can look at it and they can transition it. It takes time and it does take a bit of energy and effort, and it means looking at who you're hiring and the attributes to those people from a personality point of view, as well as a general business and skill set side of things as well. But it definitely can be built.
Brilliant. No, it's and mustn't forget the fact that we're here to celebrate your own culture in HR Revolution. And I'm interested to know, you talked about when you were trying to decide what the company was going to be called, and you were saying what you want to do is revolutionize HR. Did you set out with a deliberate culture in mind? Did you say we were going to be this kind of an organization, or I'd love it to form in this way?
I suppose to a point, yes, because I kind of knew, I think I'd been around HR for long enough, I kind of knew what I didn't want the company to become. And it was a case of we want to make sure we want to look at the positive side of things. So we want to be positive HR. And I know that's kind of detrimental in its own right, really, sometimes, because HR isn't positive sometimes. But it's about, even when you are exiting somebody, actually you're exiting for a reason. And unless it's something that's absolutely illegal or whatever, if it's just a straightforward exit, then actually it's better for both people anyway, because that individual isn't right there. There will be something out there that's perfect for them, and they need to be free to be able to go and find that thing. So it's about kind of looking at the positive sides of HR. And I think when we first started the business, it was about looking at that and kind of keeping that positivity in mind. And I think we've done that ever since we've hired. Everyone we've hired comes with a real passion for what they do, and whether that's HR generally, whether that's marketing, whether that's just getting out and speaking to people, but it's generally having that passion for people and wanting to make a difference with what they do. And that's been a real clear driver for me and for my management team, just making sure that actually when we're bringing people in, they're coming in with a view that they can kind of self-drive. They're able to come in and build. I mean, we're not a huge team. There's 10 of us, so we need people that can kind of get involved and can bring in the passion and the energy around it. Even if they've not had the experience, they still want to kind of get involved and pick it up. So I think from day one, we've always had that in mind, yes. And it's kind of then helped us to build around that.
Yeah, amazing. And I love the way in your leaders list entry, you talked about that your values are 100% pro-employee. When you say that, that sounds like an obvious thing, but it's so, in my experience, it's so rarely there. But I'm interested in getting some examples as to what, in your eyes, what 100% pro-employee looks like. I know you've got some really good systems and things that you do as a team. Can you give me an idea what that looks like in practice?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, kind of being pro-employee is really important. Without my team, the business wouldn't be what it would be. I would just be an HR consultant that's on site on my own. And to grow that business, it was about making sure the people that come to work with us as part of the team are looked after, and actually that their own particular kind of lifestyle or their career drives are all accommodated for and have that drive. I mean, these days, people don't stay in jobs forever. So it's kind of a case of engaging that and making sure that we're kind of looking after everybody, but with the business vision in mind, but that everyone kind of comes along for that journey with the right thinking. So we do look at, flexible working. We do look at home working. I'm very pro kind of adult environment. And it's one of the things that we will say to anybody new joining us is that, look, we're an adult environment. We're not going to micromanage. Take lunch when you need lunch, take a break when you need a break. If you need to work from home, great. I think we trust the team, which I know is quite hard for some employers, especially depending on what their experience has been in the past, and how their business model works. But for us, it's quite clear on delivery expectations. We are very pro client from that perspective, so it will be working with clients to make sure that they have what they need from us, and whether that's on site remotely or you know, the guys can work from home to do that, whichever is more productive is great for us. So it is about kind of looking at what they want to do, but also looking, you know, from a career perspective, where they want to go. You know, it may be that for this year HR is what they want to do, and then next year they change their mind completely, and it's kind of, you know, we can look at that and see how we can accommodate it. But it just, it's about communication, it's about keeping people in the loop and letting the team know that you actually care about them as individuals, and it's not just crack the whip and get on with things and what's the revenue at the end of the month.
It strikes me that, well, I know you're a very close-knit team, so it strikes me that it could be very difficult to recruit into such a close team. It could almost be like a new person joining might end up feeling excluded just because you were all so close. Do you do special things to bring new employees on board?
Yeah, I mean, we're very, we are a close team, absolutely. We've actually just hired two new people who started this week, actually. But we are very, part of the interview process is that because we're a small enough team, we can do this, but the part of the interview process is that they meet everybody. So we make sure that actually everybody's on board with who this person is coming in, you know, the role they're coming in to do, so that when they actually start with the business, there's no confusion as to what they're there for. There's no worries about, are they here to take my job or anything that could be, you know, we see with clients sometimes. We also make sure that we run a 90-day induction program, which basically means from day one, their 90 days, they have a buddy, they have somebody that they work very closely with for their actual day-to-day job, that they're kind of looked after, and they have a parameters around what they're going to be learning. But we also make sure they're involved in the social stuff that we do pretty much straight away. So we'll do welcome lunches and just make sure they're, you know, they've got everything they need and they've got support, and when we go out for drinks, they're included. And it's just about being inclusive and kind of having that communication. I think the core to our team especially is that we love what we do, and we just want to do a really great job for the clients that we work with. So with somebody joining us, they will have that core as well, which means that they then slot in quite easily. And we're quite aware that potentially it could become a really tricky environment, but I think because we're so passionate about what we do kind of make sure and make sure that anyone new joining us sees that it's actually not clicky, we're just really driven. Yeah.
And with such a strong culture, what would you put first in an interview? Would you put culture fit or skills fit first?
Attitude and personality for me is number one. There are obviously, especially for hiring senior HR, and there are definitely skills and experiences they need to be able to do that job. But if they haven't got the right attitude or the right personality fit for that, which is all down to kind of the attitude and the passion of what they do, really. There are some amazing HR people out there, but I think what we do is slightly different just because it's consultancy. So there is an angle of that, you know, we need to have that people base, and we have to be really on point with what we're doing, because we're dealing with lots of different industries and lots of different clients, and being able to juggle those and deliver a really good service is quite a skill. Not everybody has that skill. We can train that really easily, but they have to have the attitude and passion to want to be able to do it. And if they do, then there's never a problem. We can transition them over.
Yeah, and I guess just as you were speaking there, I got a thought that you've got this great company culture of yours, but presumably when you go out and become the part-time HR person in your clients' organizations, you have to somewhat adopt their culture as well. So it must be a difficult line to tread, maybe with your adult informal culture, to walk into a much more formal culture of a client and adapt to that. Does that, I mean, I presume that could prove tricky at some times?
It is, yeah, I mean, it's definitely something we're aware of. We're very open with our clients, and we tend to, when we work with clients, they work with us because they like the way we are, and they either want to adopt some of it, or they feel that we can inject positivity into their business and make those changes. But yes, you're completely right. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's their environment, and we don't want to disrupt that. It's the culture that they've created, and if it works, then it's fantastic. So it does mean that we do have to think about how we are, and one part of our induction process for any newbie is kind of to walk them through the fact that, you know, one day you might be in jeans and trainers and going to a meeting on a skateboard. Actually, I don't think I've actually ever done that, but and then the next you could be in, you know, a suit and assistant booted and, you know, sitting in a board meeting and having to be very formal. But it's kind of getting that spin on being able to do that quite happily. It doesn't change how we interact, or it doesn't change the kind of core deliverables that we bring to a client, because that's our whole purpose for being there. But it is, I think we do need to be seen almost to fit in. There's also an element that will, you know, some companies we've turned up in suits thinking they're a suited company and they're not. So they think we're coming in to kind of get rid of everybody because we're HR, and it's that's when we have to kind of give them the conversation about no, you know, this is, we're coming in as a positive. It's about looking at how the change is going to be made and what we can do to kind of benefit them.
We pledge to invest in our company culture, regardless of our business size, to benefit our people and propel our business forward. Why don't you take the culture pledge? Visit breathehr.com/pledge to sign up now.
Back to the idea of you being, I love the idea of you being a sort of an adult organisation, an adult culture, and clearly informal. Do you set targets for the business, and I guess more importantly for the team? Do the team work to targets?
Yeah, so we have our targets. I think targets are really important no matter what type of business you are, because if people don't know what their expectations are, then, you know, what the successes would be, basically, if they're achieving something, it's really hard to work towards. So everybody in the team has their own objectives and kind of KPIs or OKRs that they'll look at, and they run with those with the line managers. On a sometimes daily basis, but normally on a weekly, just kind of keeping up to date with what's going on. But we have kind of an overriding business goal as a team, which is kind of, you know, the number of clients we want to be working with, the type of revenues we want to be bringing in, and where those revenues come from. But we do have a very overriding kind of line of, you know, our revenue comes from us doing an amazing job and the fact that clients really love us and refer us. Not the other way around. It's not the revenue comes first and then they can kind of see what we do. So it's really important to us that we're not, you know, we don't turn into just a sales machine that's just generating revenue, although put my business hat on and that's amazing, that's what we want from a longevity and kind of keeping the culture as we want it, and just really practicing what we preach. It's about providing really good service that can generate. So a lot of the objectives and targets that are set are about service deliverables and how happy clients are, and making sure that, you know, we've got, you know, we celebrate successes, you know, make sure we remember everyone's birthdays on site with clients as well as our own team, that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. On the subject of birthdays, I remember reading or hearing Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook talking about, I think it was at Facebook, it might have been when she was at Microsoft, was talking about growing her team and how they always celebrated birthdays. And in the early days when the team was two or three people, she would bake a cake and bring it in. And then as the company grew, it sort of went from an individual cake for an employee to being a tray bake to being, you know, baking bigger cakes, and then it was shares of cakes. And yeah, exactly. And she was just saying it was an example of how you have to adjust. You keep the culture, which was to celebrate people's birthdays, but you have to adjust how it's done. So one other thing I want to pick up on there that you mentioned, OKRs. Can you just give a sort of brief overview as to what an OKR is?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty similar to objective settings, really. We look at how individuals are driven, I guess, and where their passion comes in. And actually, we're getting a lot of clients that are doing the same thing, where they're kind of looking at how to get the best out of people. And it doesn't always come from just setting an objective and expecting it to be delivered. Sometimes it comes from actually kind of looking at then what the key results are going to be and how you're going to kind of build training or workshops or guidance around that. So for those that aren't aware of what OKR means, it's objectives and key results. So it's very similar to KPIs, which is key performance indicators, but we would look at kind of what the objectives are and actually what, if we're setting an objective, what the key result needs to be so that actually they have something to strive to for, they have a plan of action of how to get to that key result. So I guess depending on what that might be, if that's delivering an HR solution to a particular client, for example, the objective would be to make sure that we're hitting certain parameters around what's needed for that client for the month. The key result areas would be that the team is engaged, we don't have anyone that leaves, you know, we've got really good feedback from the client in the, you know, from, with regards to kind of how the team are and what their productivity is like, I guess, from that perspective, right the way down to, you know, if you're making a cup of tea, the objective is to have it as, you know, strong as possible with sugar. And this is the colour it should be. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of looking at a little bit more in detail about what that looks like. There are stacks of software packages that can kind of launch official kind of projects for OKRs, and you've got documentation that you can fill in. But I think it's just whatever works for particular companies. For us, it's quite a scaled down version of that, because I think we have so many parameters and kind of processes that we have to go through anyway, just being HR. But it gives them kind of key result areas, so that actually at the end of every month or every week, you can kind of say to them, well done, this is what you've done well, and this is where we need to pick you up on things, but we need to give you training on certain things, and that's why you've not necessarily reached the results that you need to.
And where you talk about sort of getting together and feedback, are you a believer in regular one-to-ones, or, you know, how important is it for the leader and the employee to get together and talk? And I'm sort of asking a dumb question there, because I suspect you're going to say it's very important.
Absolutely, yeah, communication is key. I do think it's really important. I do also think it has to fit with how you work, because I think if it's kind of molded and you're trying to make it into something that you want it to be, but it doesn't really fit with your time parameters. You know, we're all over the place on site with clients. Very rarely is everyone in the office at once. So by having a fixed time every single day that you have to have a one-to-one, probably wouldn't work for us. So it's fairly flexible. It's also not, you know, many companies document everything. We, you know, as HR, we love documentation. But there's not everything that needs to be documented. And I think sometimes if you're having regular one-to-ones, that's all you need, as long as there's enough there from the management to kind of be able to remember what's been discussed, to manage that, the expectations around that. But I do think it's all about it's regular. I mean, you know, with technology these days, you can pretty much connect with anybody anywhere. So, you know, we'll have a quick 5-minute one-to-one while one of us is on Skype, or, you know, we're strolling around London or wherever we might be. It doesn't mean that you can't connect because you're not there. I think it's just about being visible from a point of view of being able to communicate well and keep in contact. But I do try and do regular kind of monthly catch-ups, just to see how the month has gone. And I know the line managers do as well from that perspective. They're pretty much weekly catch-ups, but they'll do a regular kind of one-to-one. And then we do quarterly review.
And do you have a sort of a particular format that you tend to recommend to clients, or that you use yourself to get the most out of a one-to-one? Because, you know, sometimes, well, the overriding thing we hear from our clients is we don't do them. And then if we're trying to encourage them to do it, the overriding thing is, well, you know, I don't know what to say, or I don't know what, you know, what they're for. Is there a good format to recommend or to use?
I think every client's different. Obviously, every organization's different, depending on what the teams are or what level of role they're at. But I do think the overriding thing is to make them not complicated, as simple as possible, because the more complicated they become, the less likely they are that they get completed. And one-to-ones for us, I mean, for me personally, it's about setting an expectation if something needs to be done, but mainly looking at kind of what the deliverables need to be at the end of the day, the week, the month, whatever that might be that you're looking at. And as a leader, looking at it from a point of view that if this person delivers X, then I'll be happy that they've actually completed their job and they're actually well on their way to kind of delivering what we need to keep up, you know, keep up the results side of things, keep the revenues coming in, keep the business ticking, and keep them happy in their role. And whatever that X might be, so whether it be delivering some code, whether it might be, you know, picking up on calls, whatever that might be, or just simply managing the team, it's them managing that backwards. So we kind of work backwards from that to say, right, so the expectations will be that on a Monday morning you check with them, or Tuesday morning, whatever it is, you check with them that they've got everything they need to be able to do that, and they're aware that that's what the expectation is for that week, that month, that quarter.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, no, I get that. And I'm always keen to point out to my line managers that the one-to-ones are there for you to find out the roadblocks that you need to remove so that they can do the best job that everybody wants them to do.
Absolutely.
I totally get that. When it comes to, you use a great phrase in the application for the culture leaders list. You say that a positive culture creates success. And, you know, I love to think of it as being a virtuous circle, that you get a positive culture, you get more success, and then success helps to build a more positive culture. But so often you can get a company where they seem to be stuck in the reverse, and that it's almost self-fulfilling, that the place isn't doing very well, therefore the mood goes down. And it sort of just seems to drive. And if a leader is trying to, if they recognize that and they're trying to change it, where would you suggest somebody starts to try and turn around a culture that maybe is going a bit toxic?
I think it's always very hard. And also by that point, normally it's quite emotional for the leader because it's their business and they can see it not going in the direction they were hoping. So it does make that even harder. From my experience, the best ways have always been opening up communication and becoming a little bit more human to your teams. I think sometimes the leaders tend to lock themselves away and try and resolve the problem and throw stuff at, whether that be throwing money to retain people or or getting rid of people or whatever it might be to try and change processes to get things working again. I think sometimes it's about just being a little bit more human about it and opening up about the problems that there are in the business. Obviously, there's only so much that you want to, divulge. And I know you don't, it's not about telling everybody everything, but at least letting them know there are issues. But then seeing who's got ideas on how things can change. It does depend on the type of workforce you have and the type of people. But in most cases that we've worked with where there's been toxicity, we've tried to remove the toxicity that's there that can be removed, that needs to be removed. And normally only a third party can kind of see that with fresh eyes, because if you're involved, you're either caught up in it yourself or you're emotionally attached to it. But I think then once that toxicity has been removed and the teams can see that you're actually there to kind of actually turn the business around and get things positive again, they're actually normally the take up on helping is normally really, really good. And it's where you see companies where they're in real trouble, and employees offer to drop their salaries or they offer to work less hours so they can, they can help with the cash flow. And sometimes some really amazing stuff comes out of it, and it's stuff that you would never expect. If you asked for it, you probably wouldn't get it, but if you opened up the forum and kind of said, can anyone help, what are our suggestions, you kind of find out the people that really do want to help.
And it's so often about the leader being vulnerable, isn't it, or being prepared to make themselves vulnerable. I remember one of my previous businesses when we hit a really rocky path, and I seriously thought the business was going to go under, and there was a point where I bluntly realized there was nothing else that I could do other than talk to the team and share it with them. And the first thing I remember when I did that was just complete relief. Now it was out in the open. Yeah. It wasn't just me. Yeah. They had a chance to help if they chose to. And to their credit, they all mucked in, and we did actually turn it round. Business was never quite the same again, but it was that I need to be vulnerable here. I need to share something that feels very uncomfortable.
I think it's important. And I think otherwise they'll fill the gaps in anyway. And normally they fill it in with the wrong information. It's better just to open it up and tell them the bits you can, so that you can, they can kind of get, actually, they understand the stresses you're under and they can then help with potentially some really good ideas.
The filling the gap with probably the wrong things is, I'm always amused when I speak to somebody and they say, oh no, we don't have a company culture. We haven't done that yet. And I'm standing there thinking, no, you've got a culture. You just don't know about it. You haven't taken the time to look for it. There is a culture there. It's probably not the one you wanted. But absolutely, it's there. Tell me, do you use a lot of the cultural terms? I mean, you've talked about some of them, but mission, vision, values, why, what, how, purpose, there's a whole raft of them. Do you build those in? Do you find them valuable? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, we're very strong on, so part of our makeup, and actually in actual fact, everything we do for ourselves, we kind of practice with our clients as well. Because I just think if we can't make it work, then for us, then it's definitely not worth going out there, and some of them are a little bit off the wall sometimes. But with our kind of handbook, we have three parts to our handbook, and one of those sections is the company culture and guidebook. And in that talks about the mission. It talks about the history of the business, because I do think sometimes anyone new joining now won't necessarily know the story of where HR Revolution came from. And it's important that they kind of know why we built business as we have. It's not necessarily going to impact on what they do day to day now, but it is important because they'll hear about things that have happened in the past, or they hear about, really good projects we've won, and it will just make them feel more of the more part of the family, really, if they've got that background. So history, mission, kind of where we're hoping to be, and kind of expectations on you know, what that looks like for everybody, really important. And also things like, you know, what's expected in the business from them, you know, the fact, I mean, we have a section in there about, you know, self-drive yourself, you know, look at things you can get involved with. Don't expect, you know, if you've got downtime and you really want to get involved in another project in another team, do it. You know, there's no egos, there's no that's my job or that's not your job. If you've got the expertise or you just want to have the experience, we tend to find that actually then when people jump in on other projects, they come up with some really good ideas and it keeps them engaged. So yeah, really important.
Is there a particular company that you can think of where you think the culture is particularly strong, or, you know, one that's worth a particular shout out?
Yeah, there's lots. I mean, you can look at companies like, you know, obviously the Googles, Facebooks and all the kind of, you know, it's what we see and what we hear on the news and all that, but they're great from a point of view of as a newbie joining, you know, it's like a whole new world. That's all great. But I do think that's also, you know, there's a lot of cost involved there, which smaller businesses just can't really afford. I think a lot of the creative industries that we work with, a lot of those companies are really good for culture. I think you have the spin of, you know, the clickiness again, you know, because people are so funky and so cool in those companies. If you're not quite that, you know, you don't feel like you quite fit in or you've got that edge, that's the side of things that then makes that a little bit harder. But they've, you know, we work with some really good companies that have sat that out, and you know, they've got that kind of down pat really on how they're going to be.
When you've visited a lot of companies, you know almost the moment you walk in through the door that something's good, that something's right. That things just
a lot more relaxed and people smiley, and they just, you know, or not even smiley. It's not like you have to be smiley all day long, cause that's just not possible, but that would be great. But I think it's just, you do get a good vibe, and it's, you know, it's about, you know, if you were being shown around an office, you know, normally I show you the showroom side of it, you know, this is how lovely office and how shiny bits. It's about, well, give me somebody who can show me behind the scenes. Let's go to the kitchen. Let's see where they're all, you know, sitting and chatting, and let's just see what that culture is like, because that's the culture. You know, that's the bit where actually you'll see what they're really doing and what things really look like.
Yeah, definitely. Just a couple of questions toward the end. This has been great, so I really appreciate your time. A couple of questions just about you as a business leader. I'm always interested from people to hear where they get their best ideas from, be it a place or a source or where. How do you get ideas?
I'm quite creative, or I like to think I see that romance trumpet. I like to think I'm quite creative from kind of an arty, graphic-y, you know, side of view things. So I like to, you know, I read a lot. I read lots of blogs. I watch people. I'm a real people watcher, and I think I take a lot from what I see just generally wandering around. I'm on site with lots of different companies. You know, I've got the, you know, I have a lot of opportunity to kind of see different people in action and how they interact. And it's really, you know, you can tell how what works and what doesn't work. And I'm a big believer in actually listening to other people, not being afraid to say I've done something wrong, or actually, do you know what, that idea I had probably wasn't the best. Who else, you know, who can come up with something better? My team are very much, I always say to them, you know, please feel free, even if it's my, you know, my idea or any of the team's ideas, if you don't agree, tell us, because we'd rather the team internally disagree and then we get something that's really good. Then it goes out to customers and then we realise it's not actually quite working. So I think it's just about having your eyes open. And I do think in this day and age of everyone being plugged in and staring at their screens all day long, that's missed. But I think that's where, you know, I would happily sit quietly and, you know, contemplate ideas. And I think my team will tell you I generate probably 10 or 20 a day that just get put in the bin.
She's really off on one again.
Yeah, exactly. But they know me, so they know that they're going to get something that actually anything good will take, anything else just forget about. So it's fine.
And I guess maybe a sort of an off the wall kind of question, but one thing that you have in your business life that you couldn't do without, it might be tech, it might not be tech, but is there a particular thing?
I was
going to
say my laptop.
Okay, well, yeah.
Oh, straight away. No, but I think my laptop, just purely because I live with, I don't really have a desk, right, because I'm all over the place, so my laptop is my life, sadly. Yeah. Sadly or not sadly, I don't know.
Well, hope it's backed up.
It is, yes, about 10 times.
Very good.
But yeah, from a business perspective, yeah, a laptop, definitely. And just my contacts, I guess. I spent a long time kind of nurturing the people that I know in business, that we, you know, just colleagues that are now friends, that, you know, just I don't think I could do what I do without having people that I could sound off with, you know, different ideas, what do they think, just generally keeping up to speed with general business culture and what's going on around. I think you can get siloed into what you do and then forget about the kind of real world out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, as I say, this has been fantastic, Wendy. I really, really appreciate the time you've taken out of a busy day. So thanks for speaking to me. Just one last thing. How can people get in contact with you? Where could they find you, online or off?
So our website, which is hrrevolution.co.uk, we've got a new website coming out soon, so look out for that. They can email me directly if anybody wants to, which is wendy.reed, which is R-E-A-D, at hrrevolution.co.uk. But all the contact details other than that are on the website.
Awesome. Thanks again, Wendy. And
all right.
We'll close it there. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again, Wendy, for sharing your insights with us. Join me next time for the penultimate episode in this first series, when I'll be talking to Kathy Haywood from Magenta Associates. We'll be chatting about how to build a great company culture in the tough world of PR. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to get new episodes as soon as they become available. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you might get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave us a review, as we'd love to know what you think. You can also find out more about Breathe and what we do by visiting breathehr.com. See you next time.